Blog Talk Radio.
The views and opinions of this show do not reflect the views and opinions of Wikicuriosity Media or its affiliates. Wikicuriosity Media, changing the world you listen to. Any music featured on Wikicuriosity Media Progress is used with the express written consent of the artist, owner, or distributor.
Coming to you live from the Wikicuriosity Studios in Knoxville, Tennessee, it's Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Cinephiles. I am your host, Dan. Joining me tonight is the lovely Miss Angel.
Hello.
And from his studio in the great state of Michigan, we got Alex.
Hello.
And you can join us as well. All you got to do is call in 718-664-9735. Again, 718-664-9735. That'll bring you into the studio with us, and you can talk to us. You can also check us out on our live feed on our Facebook page, Behind the Screen Radio Show. All you got to do is go up into the search bar of your Facebook, type it in, be the first one that pops up, click like, share, and follow. Be kept up to date on everything going on and Behind the Screen world. Also head on over to Wikicuriosity Media's Facebook page. Give them a like, share, and follow so you can be kept up to date on everything going on in Wikicuriosity Media land. From Wikicuriosity's Facebook page, you can hit the website, www.wikicuriosity.wixsite.com/WC Media. Did I say that right? I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that will be our website. On the website, you can check out pictures, you can check out blogs, you can check out all kinds of things. You can check out all of our shows from the past. Sorry, I got a bit distracted. You can also check out blogs, information about our radio shows, information about the company, and all that good stuff. Here soon, we will be posting merch on the page so that you can, buy some Wikicuriosity Media stuff. Hopefully, that'll be up within, the next few months. You can also head on over to our YouTube channel, Wikicuriosity Media. Check out all of the videos we have on there, all of these shows that have been uploaded. Currently, we only have Behind the Screen on there. That was the little test run. Get them up there and see how they do. Still working out a few little kinks, but here, hopefully within the next couple of weeks, we will have all of our live shows that we've broadcasted on Facebook. Nope I Know, Falling from Grace, and the two Behind the Screen shows. And you'll be able to check them out. Oh, I got really distracted tonight. You can also check us out on iTunes, Wikicuriosity Media. All the shows are on there. They are in alphabetical order. And the newest episodes are down at the bottom, so go check that out. All right. So it is the middle of the week.
It is.
And we've already had some excitement here in the Wikicuriosity family household. today. So, would you like to explain?
No.
Why?
So, you know, Tennessee gets a lot of rain. Last year or the year before, we put down some nonstick pads on our porch because during the ice weather, downstairs because they were icy and slick, and she fell and I fell and it hurt. Well, a couple of years down the road and a lot of rain, and our nonstick pads are no longer stuck to the porch. And I walked outside today barefoot to take the dog out. And when I stepped on the pad, it didn't stay where it was supposed to stay. So took a pretty hard fall today. Cracked my head. My foot I can't really stand on. My ribs hurt. My back hurts. My ass hurts. And scared my kids. So, yeah, it was fun.
Scared the kids. Scared your husband. I had to leave work early today to come take care of you.
Yeah.
Really the first time I've ever had to do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Still in a lot of pain. I spent a good couple hours sleeping. But hopefully tomorrow I feel better. We'll see.
Yeah, hopefully. Because you've got stuff and I've got stuff and we've got stuff to do tomorrow. Alex.
Yes.
How has your week been?
Pretty good. Kind of slow, to be honest with you. I didn't really do much. I've been playing a lot of Halo. Like, I've been super enthralled with that. And it's just consumed my life the past few days.
Really?
Yeah. I got a huge nostalgia kick, and then that just consumed me. Yeah, that's how my week went. A bunch of
Very
Halo.
Cool. Very cool. Nothing wrong with some Halo. I kind of enjoy some Halo.
It's a very good game series. I enjoy it a lot.
It is. It's probably, I would say it's probably one of the best first-person shooter video games that's out there. It's probably one of the longest-lasting titles. Probably one of the most
influential.
Influential? Yeah, that's actually a good way of saying it. Because if we go back and look at like the very first ones, like Doom and like Duke Nukem and those, then you know, I mean, those are the very first ones that came up, obviously. But
yeah.
You know, then we get into the Call of Duty series and Battlefield and stuff like that. But Halo has been one of the most unique that I have found. It's got a really intense storyline.
Yeah, it's kind of like a perfect mixture from, like, human... Like, there's a lot at stake with it. I like it a lot. It's like, if you fail, then humanity's doomed. You messed up. It's like a sci-fi mixed with reality type of thing.
Yeah, like an apocalyptic sci-fi type thing where eventually you kind of have to work with your enemy. I think that starts in the second one.
Yeah, it's like the enemy of your enemy is your friend, but
yeah,
you end up just becoming friends, and then you got one sole enemy.
Yeah. So, but yeah. I purchased the Master Chief Collection a while back, and I started playing it for a little bit, and then, of course, I stopped, because, like all video games, I tend to stop in the middle.
Yeah.
So, but it actually looks like we have a caller on the line.
Well, hello.
Hello, you are live on Behind the Screen on the Cinephiles. Who are we talking to?
My name is Squatchy McNutters,
Well, hello, Squatchy.
How is everyone doing this rainy day?
I'm all right.
Superfly.
Good. That is great to hear. Well, I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. I'm a little bit shy, so bear with me.
What is Mr. McNutters up to today?
Well, I just got back from seeing some family. I'm back in the great state of Tennessee.
Cool.
My families are kind of, let's just say they're not for the faint of heart.
Cool.
But I just wanted to call and tell everyone that I am writing my memoirs.
I can't wait to read them.
Oh, they're going to be fantastic.
I bet even Alex is on board to read some Squatchy McNutter's memoirs.
I would hope so. I hope they're good for everyone.
So, who have you, been in talks with to start, getting your memoirs out there and presenting them and stuff like that?
Well, I've been in talks with the owner of Wicked Media, and he says he's the owner, but I'm not real sure.
I don't know. There's a couple owners.
Couple owners? Well, I only know of one.
He must not be telling you the whole story. I hope you're telling him the whole story. He is kind of an asshole. You're right.
Yeah, he's kind of a big dick.
Yeah, I got that impression of him. But it's okay. He seems nice to begin with.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what we can expect in the memoirs?
Well, like I said, my name is Squatchy McNutters, and I am the resident Bigfoot. I'm writing all of my adventures. I'm 29 now, so it should be an interesting story.
Yeah, it sounds like a ton of life experience probably happened.
Oh, there was. Oh, boy, there was. You know, from being picked on. I'm not as big as the other Bigfoots, but I'm kind of considered a short Bigfoot. I'm about 6 foot tall, kind of rotund. So I'm short, but I was adopted by this nice family.
Well, that's good. That's good.
And so far, no one knows that I'm a Bigfoot.
No one knows?
No one knows. Well, they're going to know, I assume, anyway. But, you know, I decided to write all my stories out and hopefully get them out to the public so people will know what trials and tribulations Bigfoot go through.
I mean, maybe you could get a TV interview.
I don't know. That would be fantastic, but I'm not real sure if I'm good for TV.
Well, I will definitely say you have an amazing radio voice.
Well, thank you so much.
So
I like to think my voice is nice. I really do.
Are you into movies?
I'm sorry?
Are you big into movies?
No, no, not really. I don't watch much TV. I'd like to start, though.
Well, I mean, we have the perfect shows for you to listen to if you're interested in movies.
What movies being discussed?
Well, tonight we're talking about special effects of movies.
Is it scary?
Well, we might talk about some scary special effects, but we're doing practical effects versus CGI tonight.
Ah, that sounds fantasticable.
If you had to pick your favorite style of movie, your favorite genre, what would it be?
Oh. Well, the one movie that I have seen is Casablanca.
I thought he was going to say Harry and the Hendersons. But...
That was going to be... I was going to say if he had seen Harry there.
Oh, they portrayed him so wrong.
I sort of liked him. He was very tall.
Yeah.
Had a very sweet face.
Oh, they are. Most Bigfoot are. But then there's, you know, some like my dad, who is the alpha of our pack. He's mean. Gosh, he's mean. Threw me into traffic one day.
To be fair, we've all thought about that with our kids.
Well, see, I don't have kids, so I don't know.
It's a pretty normal feeling.
It can be, yeah.
I'm sure Dan's family has tried to throw him in traffic a few times. Don't be driving distracted.
There's a big wreck in front of me, and I'm in Oak Ridge right now, and these people don't know how to drive worth a damn.
This is true.
And it looks like someone's caught under car. Good Lord. Oh, no.
He could be, you know what? He could be our local traffic guy. Somebody caught under that car. Oh, that's a bad wreck.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, no. I don't think it was. It looked like a human, but I don't know. Maybe it was a box.
A human in a box?
A human in a box.
Is that what you said?
I don't know. Maybe a human in a box. I don't know. I'm not psychic.
Well, we're really looking forward to reading your memoirs, and, you know, hopefully we can, you know, hopefully the owner will, you know, publish them soon.
See, that would be nice. Sorry. I'm a little bit coffee. It's not the corona, though.
That's good.
So how has the pandemic treated you?
It's kind of rough. Got to wear a mask everywhere. But it's okay because I'm kind of hairy anyway. So people don't suspect anything. Especially my job, you know, you gotta wear a full mask and almost a full suit. It's just kind of weird.
So what kind of job does a Bigfoot that lives in human society hold down?
Well, currently I am at a meatpacking company.
Okay. Don't they worry about... Go ahead. supposed to say, don't you worry about, like, hair getting in the meat?
Oh, no. No, not at all. I wear gloves. I wear almost a full hazmat suit to work because I am hairy. I don't want hair getting in and causing people to choke on hairballs and whatnot.
Yeah, it wouldn't be good, people coughing up Sasquatch hairballs.
No, it wouldn't. No, our hair is real curt, real coarse. And it's almost like chewing on a toothpick.
That's, it doesn't paint a pretty picture.
No, it don't. Even when I get it in my mouth, I cough and gag and I almost throw up. It's kind of disgusting. You wouldn't want to see it.
I don't know. I don't know why you keep looking at me. I don't know what the hell to say to that.
You look like you're about to say something.
No, I was looking for something, but you know, toothpick hair is cool too.
Are you looking for a toothpick? Because I have plenty of them.
I yeah.
So do you have a girlfriend? Do you have a family?
I do have a family. I don't have a girlfriend. Not yet, anyway.
Not yet, anyway.
Yeah, not it yet anyway. She's very sweet. Always calls me sugar. She's a little bit taller than I am. Kind of a bigger gal, but I like that.
Is she a Sasquatch?
I'm pretty sure she's stronger than... No, she's not a Sasquatch.
Are you sure about that?
I don't know, because she is kind of hairy.
Well, we're going to hope for Sasquatch.
Exactly. Hope for Squatchy.
Yes. We're going to hope for Squatchy.
Hashtag
hope for Squatchy.
Yeah. Hashtag hope for Squatchy. Because I'm kind of shy, and I don't like putting myself out there, but I think I'll do that soon. Her name is Rhonda.
Rhonda, huh?
Yes.
Rhonda.
Rhonda, give Squatchy a chance.
She's got this weird eye, though. It's kind of cocked off to the side. And it's kind of hard to tell what she's looking at. But she's very pretty.
So she's looking at you and me both.
She usually tells me, take an eye, sugar, take an eye.
I used to do that.
What, look both ways?
Yeah.
What's that?
What'd you say?
Yeah, so you used to tell people to take an eye?
I did. They used to look completely both directions.
You could stare straight ahead and look both ways before crossing the street.
Like a lizard, little baby lizard. That didn't freak people out at all. Yeah. Then I graduated to a pirate. I wore an eye patch over one.
You wear an eye patch? That is fantastic.
Little eye stickers on it.
She used to wear an eye patch.
Oh, used to.
Yeah. Both eyes look the same way now.
Oh, okay. I thought eye patches were cool.
So currently, we call her Hop Along.
Yeah.
She had a little accident today, so she's Hop Along now.
Oh, no. I hope you're okay.
I hope so, too. Hopefully no doctor's visits in my future.
Oh, no. Last doctor I went to, he looked at me and ran. He said I wasn't human, but technically he was right.
That's true. Can you imagine a prostate exam on a Sasquatch?
No, I wouldn't want to be
I had an issue with my knee because I heard it at work. So they sent me out to the hospital. He comes in, looks at me, looks me up and down, pokes my knee, and looks at me again and says, "You're not human," and poked out the door, screaming.
What a bitch.
Well, that's rude.
He was very rude, and I told him that. I caught him in a corner, told him he was very, very rude.
Then he ate
him. Then he started crying. I guess he was sad that he was rude. I don't know.
So, when you do, like, regular checkups, do you go to a doctor or do you go to a vet?
I tried going to a vet, but they said they don't take humans. But I made a friend. He's a veterinarian, and it's kind of the same medicine. So he checks me out from time to time when I get injured or when I have a tooth problem.
So does he know you're a Sasquatch?
Yes, he knows. He is very, very fascinated.
Very cool.
It's always good to have friends.
Yeah, it's good to have, friends that you can trust.
See, I do have another friend. He is a duck, and his name is Quackers.
I have a friend, too. He's a skeleton. His name is Ulysses.
You have a skeleton friend named Ulysses?
I do.
That is fantastical.
He's pretty quiet, though.
Yeah, Quackers is kind of quiet, too. He don't really talk all that much.
Alex, do you have a...
Quackers.
Well, Alex, do you have any questions for our friend Mr. McNutters?
No, I think I'm good.
No questions for me?
Nope.
Okay. I'm an open book, remember? I'm writing my memoirs.
All right, well, Mr. Squatchy, we do have to go ahead and take a break real quick, but I would like to keep you on the line, if you're okay with that, while we're on break, and maybe we can get the owner in here and he can talk to you about publishing your memoirs.
Okay, that would be just fine.
All righty. Well, we're going to put you on hold for just a second, and then we'll bring you into our green room when we go on break.
That is fantastic. Thank you.
Not a problem. We'll talk to you in a bit.
Okay.
All right. It is about time for us to take a break, so we'll be right back.
Behind the screen, we'll be right back.
Two minute people with their hearts set on Welcome back to Behind the Screen Radio Show.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. If you'd like to join us, you can call in 718-664-9735. Again, 718-664-9735. We were just talking to, I believe, a Bigfoot before we went on break. No?
What was it?
But I think we were actually just talking to a Bigfoot before we went on break.
A Bigfoot, yes.
Mr. Squatchy McNutters. Can't wait to read his memoir.
Right, right.
So, all right. So, tonight, we are talking about one of the most important aspects of just about, well, I mean, you know, one of the most important aspects of any movie that's out there, special effects. When we talk about, when we say special effects, a lot of people think like visual effects. But there's all kinds of aspects that go into special effects. You've got sound, you've got like ambient sound, you've got visual effects, you've got audio effects. So there's a whole like broad spectrum of special effects that we can talk about tonight. One of the things I wanted to do first is I want to kind of focus on visual effects tonight, because that seems to be a, or right now at least, that seems to be a big part of a lot of movies out there. Alex, are you with us?
Yeah, I just came back.
Okay, cool. So one of the biggest contentions when it comes to visual effects is CGI versus practical effects. And, you know, which is better, which works better for different types of movies. Before we really dive into that, Alex, would you like to give us like a brief history of CGI and blue screen and green screen and stuff like that?
Sure. So CGI, computer generated images. Sorry. So they are basically they're effects that people make on the computer, and it's a lot easier to do instead of like practical. Because if you take like say like an explosion, that's a very dangerous thing to do practically. So if you do it CGI, it's safer and it still looks as good. They didn't start doing that. I'm not sure when they started doing CGI. But blue screen and green screen, they started doing around 70s with Star Wars and whatnot. I think George Lucas was the one who kind of invented blue screen for Empire Strikes Back. Because he couldn't get certain shots that he wanted. So they came up with blue screen. And ILM, the company that does all of his CGI and stuff and all of his props, they came up with the blue screen so they could do those effects that aren't as big and extravagant.
Okay. So what exactly is entailed in using like the blue screen back then, and then they use green screen now? How does it work?
So honestly, it doesn't really matter what the color is. Like, it can even be a red screen. It just depends on, from what I know from my experience of editing in video, is you just need a keyer. So like, you can have a red screen. You just need to key out the red and put in a background. But the blue screen worked for George. That's just the color he picked. And yeah, but they had to switch it because certain things weren't looking good on certain backgrounds. Like, they would have, like, a blue shot with, like, people wearing blue and stuff, and it would key them out. So they would switch to green screen and whatnot. But now we're at a time where you can wear basically whatever, and you could just key out, like, certain shades of green and certain shades of blue. But, yeah, the color doesn't really matter all too much. It's just the preference of what the filmmaker wants.
Okay. So when we talk about special effects and specifically, like, visual effects, and we're looking at, like, huge milestones and like, franchises and movies and stuff like that that, like, really innovated the area of special effects, obviously, we have to talk about George Lucas to begin with.
Yeah.
When he created Star Wars, the Star Wars franchise with New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. He was, of course, he was the inventor of the blue screen, like you said. But he did some really, really innovative things with practical effects that haven't been able to be precisely duplicated with CGI today.
Yeah, and that's what I think practical has over CGI. When you talk about, like, practical versus CGI, both of them are useful in certain areas, but the way that George used practical effects back in the day to his advantage was just mind-blowing. Like, he would just scale down things and explode them, and it would look like an actual explosion. And, like, you could believe that that TIE fighter just exploded, or the Death Star. But, like, if you do CGI, you can kind of tell whenever it's fake. Like, you can tell, like, ah, no, that's just generated stuff. You can't do that in real life. But when you do it practically, it just looks more real. But sometimes you can't.
Right. Well, I would say, so one of the biggest, like, differences in practical and CGI effects that I can come up with is when George Lucas released his special edition movies, the special edition of his three, where he went back and added some scenes, cleaned it up a little bit, and put some more CGI into it. And the scene that gets me the most, that I really dislike that he changed, was the destruction of the Death Star.
Yes. I know what you're talking about. That scene, I don't know, I think he got it right the first time, and just changing it was just, eh. It lost the charm, it lost the, that kind of nostalgia of watching it explode for the first time, and then he went back and changed it, and it was just, meh.
Well, for me, of course, I grew up with the movies, but the biggest contention that I have is when you look at the like, the destruction in original release, it's literally, because what he did is he had a model that he put little micro explosives in it, miniature mm-hmm. explosives, and then he set it off, blew it up, filmed it. He literally, shit, knocking my mic over here, he literally blew up his own model to film it again.
Yeah, that's what he did with a lot of his, like, ship explosions, is he would build a model and then explode it. Like in episode
yeah.
6 when the Super Star Destroyer hit the Death Star, those are two models colliding with each other. Like,
yeah.
those models are, like, I don't know, as big as a computer screen. Like, they're not very big, but I don't know. I think it was just ingenious how he filmed those shots.
Yeah. I mean, he would literally take up an entire soundstage to create his, like, space scenes. Like, when he did the Death Star run, even before the trench run. Before the trench run, when they were bombing the outside of the Death Star, he literally set up little explosions on his model and took the camera and ran it down the model, and as the camera went by, it tripped the explosions, and you saw the explosions.
Yeah.
And to me, it just looks, it looks more realistic, especially in space. Like when
it's
the
more
first,
authentic.
It is. Because when in the original, New Hope, when the Death Star exploded, it was literally an explosion, and then that was it. There was no fire. There was nothing. I mean, it literally just went to pieces, and then you saw the little sparkles.
Yeah,
and
I'm sure, like, before they had behind the scenes in, like, the 70s and 80s, people were sitting in the theater like, wow, did he really just, like, build that entire station up in space and then explode it? Or, like, I don't know, you just sit there and you guess of how he did it, and then you would never think that that Death Star is the size of an exercise ball.
Yeah, yeah, it was literally how big it was. But then when he released the special editions, and he added more flair to the explosion, and he had the ring that came out, it just, it seemed fake.
Yeah.
You know, like, would there really have been a shockwave of that magnitude coming out of, you know, the space station?
Yeah.
I don't know. To me, it just wasn't. When he redid the movies with added graphics and added CGI, it kind of took away some of that magic of the movies.
Definitely. If he wanted to do something like that, I probably would have, if I were him, I probably would have waited until the technology got a little bit better. Because now if they did that, there's endless possibilities to what they could do with remaking shots, because CGI now is different from CGI back then. Especially is different than when he redid the movies. It just looks so much more real and authentic now, but there's still a certain, like, authenticity to doing it practically.
Yeah. So George Lucas was probably the biggest innovator in special effects. When he was making his Star Wars movies, there were certain things that he wanted to do that they didn't have the technology for, that he had to create the technology for. One of the things that most people don't realize is the scroll at the beginning of each episode. Like, he actually had that all printed out, put on a machine that rolled it, had the camera facing right on it. That was the only thing in frame, and had it, like, on a transparent, like, sheet, and had the star field underneath, and literally just scrolled it up.
And what makes that even harder is he had a match cut that to a scene of a space battle or a ship chasing another ship. Like, he had to transition that into an actual shot. I think that makes it 10 times harder, because you got to match cut that, like, perfectly.
Oh, yeah. Because in every one of the movies, after the scroll, the camera pans down to the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. I think Star Wars has always been the first in innovation when it comes to effects. Like, look at The Mandalorian. They did the movie screen thing. Forgot what it was called. But
yeah,
it really just is an image that tracks like a treadmill almost. And it makes the world look so real. And it's not a very, like, high budget type of thing. But they tried it with Star Wars, and now I believe they're using it in the next Thor movie. And I think it looks great, honestly. I love it.
Yeah, it's like the background. It's the background painted on like a huge screen, and it moves as the camera moves and as the characters move.
Yeah. And George didn't have a big hand in that, or really a hand in it at all, but his protégés, Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, definitely did.
Yeah, because I think Dave Favreau actually came up with that concept.
Jon Favreau?
Dave Favreau.
Dave Favreau. That's the new person now. It's Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau. Dave Favreau. Sorry. Jon Favreau, I believe, came up with that concept when he did the live-action version of Jungle Book.
Austin says, like, 1840s saloon theaters.
Yeah, but just elevated to the next level. Like, you can't really do that sort of thing now. It won't look right. Then you got to match it and stuff. But
yeah,
if you're able to do it, like, electronically and stuff like that, it makes it look a little bit more authentic and real.
Yeah. Well, we've had painted backdrops since, you know, the beginning of movies. I mean, that's how they used to do backdrops. And a lot of them, you can't really tell that they're painted. They're such fine detail that you can't really tell that they're painted unless you really, really look at it.
Yeah.
So, one of the biggest innovations that George Lucas came up with that really took the world by storm was rotoscoping.
Yes, with the lightsaber effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's freaking awesome.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about rotoscoping?
So rotoscoping with the lightsabers, I'm not sure where else it was used, but with the lightsabers, there was a motor in the lightsaber handle that was connected through a wire that would be on the actor's like hip, like a battery pack attached to their hip. And in episode 4, you can actually see the wire when he first ignites it, but, they would stick a pole with movie screen reflective material, and it would reflect the light back like 10 times as much, and they would rotate it so it would look like it's moving and like flickering and, like there's an actual beam there, and then they would just place the color over that material. So it looked like there's a light there, but it's really just reflective material, cool looking. And then they stopped doing it with the prequels.
Yeah. I don't know. There are parts in, especially A New Hope, where you can see, like the where the rotoscope effect, yeah, where it goes away. In the fight scene between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a case of what else would they have done? Because, like, they couldn't hit each other with, like, light bulbs, cause, or, like, fluorescent light bulbs, because that's just impossible. So what I think, for what he had, he did an amazing job with it.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not saying that it was a bad... Excuse me. I'm not saying it was a bad thing. I'm just saying that, you know, there is that moment, and I think they fixed it in like the special editions and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. It's just interesting how he, like, thought of it.
Yeah. I mean, he came up with his own special effects company, ILM, Industrial Light and Magic, to literally create the effects that he needed for his Star Wars movies.
Yeah, it's like literally my dream job is to work there. That'd be so cool.
Yeah. I mean, and ILM does a lot. It's one of the biggest special effects companies in movies in general. When you watch even... movies that aren't like sci-fi movies and stuff like that, you'll see that it's Industrial Light and Magic that did the effects for it.
Yeah.
So.
They probably had a hand with at least 90% of movies in Hollywood with their special effects. With, like, action movies, not, like, drama movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe some, but I don't know. They don't really have too much effects, special effects.
So one of my favorite examples of practical effects is the movie Alien from 1979. So the creature, I don't know how many people know this, but the actual xenomorph creature, the design of it was created by H.R. Geiger, who is a really famous gothic type artist and creator. He's done a lot of designs, especially for aliens. He did it for Species, he did it for Alien. And I think he even, I want to say he had a hand in help. I don't know. I'll have to look. But he helped do, like I said, the design of the alien costume. But the alien was actually a really tall, skinny man that was dressed up in the costume. And honestly, to me, that effect was a lot creepier than when they did it in like the Aliens versus Predator movies with CGI on some of those effects, obviously. And then like Covenant and Prometheus and stuff like that. Just the way that he was able to move within the scene and the setting that he was in, it looked more realistic and it looked a lot scarier.
Definitely. I think CGI has a place in movies, but whenever it's overused or used in areas where it just doesn't need to be used, I think that's irritating. I think the Marvel movies are the biggest with that, was over, not overusing CGI, but using CGI in places that really doesn't need CGI.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do believe that CGI does have a place, especially in movies, in fantasy-type movies, and like over-the-top, like sci-fi movies. Where when you're on a different planet, you need to have a different background and stuff like that. Like you said, Marvel movies, like the Infinity Saga, especially Infinity War and Endgame, where they were literally all over the universe. They had to use green screen.
Austin said he thinks, like any other movie element, it's just a tool that needs to not be abused.
And I completely agree with Austin, and I think that there are some directors and some special effects creators that have gotten lazy because they know they can create it in CGI. Look at like Iron Man's suit.
Yeah.
It's most of it's CGI.
But it's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
I think his suit needs to be mostly CGI because you can't really create an Iron Man suit and have it look that fluid and cool. But like,
I mean,
with characters like Spider-Man and Captain America, I don't think they need too much CGI because a lot of their stuff can be done practically. Obviously, like the web slinging and stuff like that. But like the fight scenes definitely don't need to be CGI with Spider-Man and like Captain America.
I mean,
Iron Man is different because he's in the sky blasting stuff, so I think that's okay.
I can see it to a point. However, if you go to any huge Comic-Con, you will see a lot of these cosplayers that have created practical suits, practical Iron Man suits, and practical War Machine suits. That's
true. Do they look as good, or could they work as good on screen? Because, like, they're fine walking around and stuff, but when you're running and jumping and attached to wires and flying and whatnot, it's going to be a lot more difficult to move around in that armor than it would be to just partially do the armor and then just CGI the rest of it.
Well, I mean, like I said, I agree with you on most of it. But I still think that in some of the Marvel movies, there was way too much green screen. I think a lot of it could have been done with practical effects.
Can they work as good to the standard of the general populace as well?
And I think that's a problem that we have with CGI, is that we, as a movie-going populace, have come to the... We have standards when it comes to movies. And we know that CGI is a thing, so we expect it to be used. But when we look at movies, and you and I have noticed this before, especially in a lot of horror movies that we've seen, where they will use practical effects versus CGI, and it just looks 10 times better and works a lot better within the movie.
Yeah.
I think the big thing with horror, I'm not sure when they started doing it. I feel like it was in like the early 2000s, is when they started using CGI blood for a lot of the effects, and it just looks like shit. And then whenever you switch to more practical blood effect, it just looks 10 times better.
I think stuff like that,
like, you don't need the CGI blood. You don't need, like, in Scream, they even had, like, a CGI knife at times. You really don't need that. Like, you just...
No. And that's the problem that I have with CGI, is that there are times when it is way overused, and I think it's because the special effects artists expect to use it, you know? Some of them have gotten lazy.
Yeah, definitely. Like in Spider-Man Far From Home is a big example. I'm not sure what the time restraint on that movie was, but the scene where Nick Fury is sitting in the hotel room, 100% of that is CGI besides Samuel Jackson sitting in the chair. Like the gun he is holding is CGI, the screen behind him is CGI, the chair he is sitting in is CGI. That is so, like... It's not really lazy because people put the work in for that. It's just they didn't want to make it an actual set, and it's kind of frustrating because they could have made that gun a prop. They could have made that chair a prop. Like, they could have filmed that in an old Italy hotel room. Like, they could have just flown to Italy and said, hey, can we film here for, like, a day or two? But
they
could have recreated it.
They could have created it on a soundstage instead of putting him in a... you know, in a green screen room on a green screen chair and literally just said, okay, this is what you're doing.
Awesome, because it's not the artists, it's the directors and the producers. Artists get a bad rap for already getting abused by directors.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's the artist's problem. That's why I said it's not lazy, because the artists do put in a lot of work for that, and it did look pretty good, but they didn't need to use that. That scene could have been 100% practical, and it would have looked just as good, if not better.
Yeah. And he's right. I mean, I did say artist. And you're right. It is the directors. I stand corrected. Because a lot of the directors are...
They choose what happens.
Yeah. They're like, we'll just put them in front of green screen and fix it in post. When you have a character that can interact with the background and interact with characters, it makes the movie feel 100% more real. If we take Thanos, for instance, we all know that Thanos was CGI, 100%. What they did is they put... He does. But I think the reaction of the actors would have been a lot different, a little more real, had they been able to interact with a practical effect.
I mean, there was sort of a practical, like the Thor scene in Wakanda when he gets him with the axe and he's like right before the snap. There, Josh Brolin is in like a Thanos suit almost, so they could have that interaction. But with like the big scale battles, they're almost 100% CGI.
Yeah, and you can tell. No matter how good the CGI is, you can tell. You can tell 100% that all the characters there are CGI.
Yeah, and I think it works well with like space creatures and stuff, because like we already know that those creatures aren't real, and the fact that they don't look real is okay. And even with Spider-Man and Iron Man's suit, when their faces aren't showing, I'm fine with those being CGI. When you take like a human, like for example, the original cut of the Justice League movie and Superman's face, you cannot CGI people's faces just yet.
No,
at least
no.
Film was made. You just can't. It doesn't look right. You can tell that it's CG and computer generated.
Well, like, honestly, like when they did it for Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a beautiful tribute, but when they did try to put his face in the scene, you could tell.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I think they might be doing that with the new one. Like, they haven't announced anything like that, but I think Cody Walker is listed as a person that's cast in the movie. I could be wrong. That could have been a rumor.
I wouldn't doubt it.
But I don't know. I think it's wrong using a dead man's face and using his brother. I just think that's just not right.
Like,
it could be a tribute or whatever, have him in the movie. I just think it's terrible. Just leave it as it is.
Honestly, though, it's no different than, you know, music offices that was laziness or rushed, because people online have done it better, so they just suck at it as directors, and maybe even artists, and that is true. We've seen it with the, Austin, if you're listening, what's the word I'm thinking of? The people online that we think are real people.
Bots?
Deepfakes.
Yeah.
We've seen it. They look 100% real. There's no glitch there at all. You can't tell.
Well, a lot of that, so it a lot of deepfakes, they're not, so they're very short clips.
They are, but they have had interviews with these deep fakes, and you just can't tell that it's not a person.
Yeah.
And so I think the technology is there. They just need to use it.
I can see that.
Superman didn't need that much time.
No. No.
Honestly, yeah.
I will say one of my...
One of the best deep fakes that they have done in recent time was in The Mandalorian with Luke Skywalker.
A lot of people
hated that. I was perfectly fine with it. I would have rather than did that than get another actor to play him, but I think what they did was the right move.
See, I'm on the fence about it.
How else would they have done it?
Well, and I get that, you know, and I'm kind of with you on it. I mean, Luke Skywalker has always been, you know, one of my sci-fi heroes, you know, up until the sequel trilogy where they just kind of made him this, you know, recluse little bitch. But when he showed up in The Mandalorian and they showed his face, from far away, it looks really good.
Right.
But when they do a close-up of it, it's... I mean, you can obviously tell that it's a fake, and you know it's a fake because...
Well, so Austin says that Luke, compared to Luke and Leia in Episode 8 or 9, it's proof that rushing and laziness makes the difference.
Yes. Yeah. That Luke was a lot better than in the movies. And it looked a lot better, sounded a lot better. Literally,
to be fair, it was the
first
time they tried that in a Star Wars movie. But still, if they would have took more time on it, it would have looked better. It didn't look all that bad. Like, you could tell, yeah, that's Luke
but
and
look
Leia,
at the studio unit.
Like,
they should have had it.
Yeah. I mean, it's ILM that's doing it. You know, ILM is supposed to be the cutting edge of visual effects. And I think people are relying too much on computers to do their job. Because there are some scenes where you can just literally, you know, punch in a code and it does it for you. There's no thought or effort put into making the scene the best that it can be. You know, if Star Wars, if the original trilogy was made today, 90% of those movies would be CGI. And if we look at them now, compared to some of the graphics in even the prequel trilogy, some of the effects, it's a lot better. I mean, if we take the fight scenes in Return of the Jedi between the TIE Fighters and the X-Wings and stuff like that, where they used miniatures and they used practical effects, and we look at Rogue One with the X-Wings, in my opinion, the visual effects in Return of the Jedi are better. The fight that they move more realistic. It's more realistic. It's a more realistic movement versus what they were doing in Rogue One.
Yeah, and I think Rogue One did a really good job. Like that whole aerial scene with the X-Wings and stuff, I think that looks fantastic. And I honestly wouldn't mind if they not really redid that for the sequels, but if they did another movie with that sort of movement, I think I would want that for that movie. Like, if you look at Episode 3, they had that massive battle scene over Coruscant. Looks amazing and fantastic, but then again, 60% of that whole scene was close-ups on Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
It's still a fantastic-looking battle, and I think Episode 3 had some of the best-looking CGI effects out of the prequels.
He said, I think using Rogue One as an example is bullshit, since it's the lesser of all the movies and is also terrible, like it was shit anyway.
I mean, so I completely agree. I do. The whole movie was just total crap.
It was. It was a horrible movie.
But if we look at, like, they used a lot of the same vehicles in Rogue One as they did in the original trilogy, because that's what was leading up to the original trilogy. I mean, you have an AT-AT, you have the AT-STs, you have the X-Wings and the TIE Fighters and stuff like that. And that's the closest one that I can compare to the original trilogy, because it is the closest. Even if we look at the sequel trilogy with the fight scenes, I mean, they're just...
I think Rogue One CGI is better than the sequels. I don't know, for some reason, the ships in Rogue One just look better than the ships in the sequels.
I will say the effects and the look of the effects were better than in the sequels. I mean, the sequels were just crap anyway.
Rogue One was bad, but that fight scene, like up in the sky over Scarif, was pretty cool.
I will admit that was pretty cool. Yeah, it was probably the best part of the entire movie.
Yeah, and it was done well with the CGI. I don't know if you talked about it, because I was looking something up. But the deepfake in that, in Rogue One with Carrie Fisher and Tarkin.
Yeah.
At the time, I was like, okay, those are pretty good. But then you look back, it's like, maybe they shouldn't have just, maybe they should just not have shown their faces.
I agree. It's very odd for me to see a lot of these deepfakes, especially in Star Wars movies, because it's like in the prequels where they use Ewan McGregor as a younger Obi-Wan. You can see the almost, you can see the facial similarities between him and Sir Alec Guinness.
Yeah.
And he does look like a, literally looks like a young Obi-Wan.
Yeah, I mean, like they did with Han Solo, I honestly don't like the actor they chose for Solo. I don't think he looks like Harrison Ford at all when he was young. I thought that was a bad choice for an actor. But he played the role well. Like, yeah, that's Han Solo. We look at him, it's like, okay, yeah, it's Han Solo. Just like when you look at Ian McGregor or Alec Guinness, yeah, you're like, oh, yeah, that's Obi-Wan Kenobi. They could have used some different actor that looks, like, identical to Carrie Fisher. And I forgot who played Tarkin. But there's actors out there. There's people out there that's, like, that's their whole career is looking like celebrities. I'm sure you could have found one of them to just stand there.
Well, I mean, when we look, so there was a rumor, and I think it's been squashed a couple times by now, that Sebastian Stan was going to play a young Luke Skywalker.
That came up because somebody compared two pictures of him. I think Mark Hamill has even joked about it, but I don't think it was a serious consideration at all.
No, and Sebastian Stan was actually asked, would you play a young Luke Skywalker? And Sebastian Stan came back and said, the only way I will do it is if Mark Hamill himself gives me his blessing. If he says,
if they did a whole movie of just a CGI deepfake Luke Skywalker, I'd be very disappointed.
Austin said the deepfakes are also weird because they're obviously meant for the generation that grew up with those movies, and that generation doesn't like CGI or the sequels that much, so bad part on the directors.
I don't know. There's one major problem with Sebastian Stan playing Luke Skywalker, and that's the height difference. Because Mark Hamill's like, what, 5'8", 5'9"? And Sebastian Stan's like, what, 6'6", 6'1"? He's tall.
He is,
You'd have to finagle your way through that one.
You can get around that with a little bit of movie magic.
And they have, with Tony Stark and whatnot. Because Tony... or Robert Downey Jr. is he's not the tallest guy, but they had to make him look taller next to, like, Steve Rogers and Thor and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are ways to get around, you know, height differences.
Small
like
Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's actually done pretty well.
I was going to say, if we go back to the original Captain America and we look at that deep fake, that was actually done really well. It was
for what was
almost,
needed.
You could almost think that Chris Evans like starved himself for that role.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and honestly, when I first saw him come out, my very first thought was, okay, how the fuck did they get him to look like that? And then
how did they make
logic,
the small guy look big?
No, it was the other way around. How did they make the big guy look small?
Yeah, I was talking about when he first came out of the chamber.
Oh, yeah.
He said it's not deep fake if it's his own face. It's just special effects. Get with the program.
Okay, whatever.
Same difference.
But,
same concept.
You know, I mean, it was a brief microsecond that I was like, wait, what? And then my logic circuits kicked in. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's CGI. Duh, it's fucking Marvel.
Well, you see, I thought it was just Chris Evans was, like, walking around, like, hunched for, like, the close-up shots. And then for, like, the far-away ones, they kind of did just, like, CG over his face and used a small guy. But, yeah, I think they did pretty well with that.
I think they did. I think that was probably one of the best physical alterations that a movie has done to one of their actors.
Yeah.
One of the worst was in X-Men 3. I can't remember the name. X-Men United. X3, X-Men United. When they did a young...
The third X-Men was called Last Stand.
Okay, Last Stand. I'm sorry. My
number two
is
was United.
That's right. Last Stand. Where they did a young Professor X. Where they took away Patrick Stewart's wrinkles.
Oh, I think that was in X-Men Origins Wolverine. Whenever Logan is escaping the compound with all those other people, and then Xavier comes
out
the corner.
No, I was talking about when Xavier and Magneto went to visit Jean Grey.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the same thing, making Patrick Stewart look young. I think both instances kind of failed.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just weird the way that they did it.
Yeah, especially in X-Men Origins Wolverine, like, he was, like, almost kind of shiny looking, like they polished his bald head or something. It's like Patrick Stewart went through, like, a buffer. It was so weird seeing him. I was like, what? What is he doing? And he was walking, I think. It's like, why would they do that for?
No, I think he was in the wheelchair. I don't
yeah, maybe. I don't know. That movie was a catastrophe anyway. I'd rather not think about it.
Although I will say the special effects of Wolverine being disintegrated over and over again was actually kind of cool.
In which movie?
In Last Stand.
Oh, yeah.
When he went to go kill Jean. When he went to kill the Phoenix.
Yeah.
So. He says, yeah, it's X3, yeah.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
First class, that young boy's hot.
Oh,
I have no words. I just read the messages.
You're talking about,
James McAvoy?
Yeah.
I mean, he's not...
See, instances like that, I think, making a young character, or recasting for a young character,
he's
works.
The definition of good practical effects.
Jesus.
I don't know, I think Michael Fassbender was a good choice, too.
I agree.
It's tricky when you recast young characters to play... Or when you recast older characters to make them look young, I think it's a tricky area.
Yeah. If they would have done that for The Mandalorian and brought in Mark Hamill and then just de-aged his face, I think it would have looked worse than the deepfake.
Especially now, because Mark Hamill, he's older. You know, he doesn't have the body he did back in the 80s. It would just
not
look great.
He looks completely different now.
No. No. It would not.
He looks completely different now. And
yeah.
Personal opinion, he actually looks like a dick now. Like, his face is not friendly.
When in actuality, he is actually a really good guy.
Although, to be fair,
yeah, I don't know.
I admire that in a person, just so we're clear. I'm okay with that.
I don't think I could ever see... I don't think I could ever see Mark Hamill playing a villain. He can voice a villain, but visually play a villain, I don't know. I mean, he's done it before.
So they'd have to take away the squint.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, too many years on Octo.
Yeah.
Without glasses. Although you think he'd be used to it living on Tatooine his entire childhood.
Yeah.
He's older now.
Yeah. He's got the ice.
The cataract is kicking in.
I will say there is one movie, and we reviewed it, oh God, wasn't last year, I think it was the year before, that we were actually surprised that they used practical effects versus special effects, was Winchester, the horror movie about
Lady
Winchester.
Yeah, it was actually really cool, though. Like, every bit of that, effect-wise, was really cool. It wasn't the greatest movie ever, but the effects were pretty awesome.
Yeah, because it was all practical effects.
Yeah.
They got a bunch of extras and literally put them in makeup and costumes.
Austin said that whole fucking movie was real. Every bit of it.
I mean, it's based on, you know, real-life events.
Yeah, I do not want to go to that house. Actually, maybe I do.
I wouldn't mind visiting.
I'd never get out, though. I'd get lost.
I have no idea what movie you guys are talking about.
You said including the house.
Yeah.
I agree. It was incredibly realistic.
Yeah. So, the movie Winchester, it's about the widow Winchester, who was married to, I can't remember his first name.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Like the house.
Not
really
John.
Bridges, but it has like secret rooms and stuff.
No, she literally had people working on it 24/7.
Building new rooms, new hallways, new stairs.
Yeah, they would build a portion of the house and then tear it down and rebuild other places. She had been told by a psychic or by, you know, one of those people that did mediums, that she was haunted by the ghosts of the people that were killed by her husband's invention, the Winchester repeating rifle. So in order to confuse the ghosts, she continuously had construction going on her house. And she would have doors that led to nowhere, stairs that would go up, you know, into oblivion.
Yeah, Austin said I have secret rooms now because back then it was built abstractly.
Yeah.
Like there's rooms that probably people now don't even know about.
Yeah. Like,
imagine being the contractor on that build. Like, what the hell does she want now? Oh, she wants an eighth bathroom? Nice.
Well, I mean, can you imagine being the contractor and getting that contract?
It's constant money because there was constant work.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure they were like, I don't give a shit what she wants. We'll build four staircases today, lady. I don't care.
Imagine the debt the Winchester Company was in because she kept building that house.
Well, I mean, she was rich
anyway.
She was
quite wealthy.
Yeah, and she was still getting royalties from the Winchester rifles.
Yeah, but that whole movie was, the effects were amazing.
Yeah, and it's only a few years old, and they used practical effects.
I almost like it when they do that, though, whether it's a scary movie or a movie. I mean, this wasn't really scary. It's a little more psychological. I mean, it was kind of scary, but there's a lot of psychology to it. I just think it's great when they use something that looks, because it looks more realistic.
Yeah. One of the best uses of visual effects, practical effects, and I would be remiss if I didn't talk about it in this episode, is the movie Psycho, the original Psycho from the 60s. In the shower scene, where Norma Bates stabs, I don't remember her name.
Right.
But, you know, stabs her to death, and you see the blood going down the drain.
Wasn't that Tarkovsky?
No. Actually, it was not. Do you know what they used to simulate the texture of the blood and to get the right look on black and white video.
I always thought it was chocolate.
Uh-uh. Ketchup.
Makes sense.
Yeah. They literally used ketchup because ketchup is red, obviously.
Which gives it a different color in black and white because the chocolate sauce would have been too dark.
Yeah. And it has the right consistency. I mean, they had to water it down a little bit.
Yeah.
But it gives the right consistency of blood going down the drain.
Can you imagine the person who's tasked with the job of finding the right blood? Do what you got to do. Find it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Psycho the movie was only a minute and a half long and it was just the shower scene.
I mean, that's the scene. That scene and the scene where we find out that Norman Bates is actually talking to a skeleton of his mother are probably the most memorable scenes in that movie.
Yeah, the mom scene was pretty weird.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, it's Alfred Hitchcock, so it's a fucking legend.
Yeah, absolutely.
So. But. But, no, I so we talked about this Sunday. And that's kind of how we got the idea for tonight's show, was the use of practical effects versus special effects. In the movie Sunday, in the movie that we reviewed on Sunday, Outside the Wire.
That's good, because for about 2 seconds I was like, what movie is that?
there was a small little debate between me and a couple of our co-hosts about whether they used practical or special effects for the Gumps. And obviously when they're exiting the vehicle and when they're getting set up and stuff like that, obviously that is CGI.
And it's, unfortunately, it's actually very obvious.
It is.
Because it does have that computerized movement look.
It does. It has that computerized feel to it.
Yeah, as soon as they, it's that weird, like, jumpy look that happens when they use old CGI.
Yeah.
And you can tell immediately. It's like when, like, with, like, I don't know, the old Terminator movies and stuff. Like, I don't know, just that weird jumpy look. So you can tell as they're coming. There's no fluidity to it.
It's like stop motion on computer.
Right.
Which is what they use for Terminator.
Right. So it's just weird.
Yeah. But in some of the scenes, and I still hold to, you know, still hold today, that they used some practical effects. You know, I mean, they had to have built at least one of them as a practical effect in order to have some reference and frame to go off of.
I mean, I guess. I don't know. Because of the way programming works now and the things that you can create, it is absolutely viable that they created the whole thing on a computer.
I mean, it is, but you would be able to tell. And we've actually had movies that were completely done with CGI. You look at Scanners, Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within, and Avatar. Like, those are the three biggest movies that were completely done CGI. And you can tell that they were done CGI. And I still say Final Fantasy, their special effects and their CGI was a lot better than Avatar.
Avatar was just a... Are you talking about The Last Airbender or the Blue Monkey People?
Blue Monkey People. Yeah.
James Cameron.
Oh, I actually really like the effects in that movie.
I did too.
Like, to create
I thought
a...
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it looked pretty good, to be honest.
To me,
I mean,
it was
some
like
scene, some scenes it was like, eh. Yeah, whatever. Like, doesn't really look all that great, but most of the scenes were pretty good.
my childish ass really just only could compare it to, like, I felt like I was finally getting my kind of sort of real life Fern Gully movie. Super excited about that.
Live action Fern Gully.
Yeah, I mean, because of the way that they created the rain, you know, the rainforest and shit, like it that's what it constantly referenced in my brain, and I was like, this is so awesome because that's how it should look.
Well, my issue was the CGI Sigourney Weaver, which Sigourney Weaver is one of my favorite badass female actors. She kicked ass in every single Alien movie. She was amazing in Ghostbusters. She did extremely well in Galaxy Quest. In every movie that she's been in, she just commands the screen.
Galaxy Quest was awesome.
It was. In Avatar, Blue Monkey People, she was kind of lackluster, and it was very disappointing because I love Sigourney Weaver as an actress. I really do. And her CGI was just, it was like a bad kid's painting of her.
When she went into the body of a blue monkey person, or did they actually CGI her face?
No, they actually CGI'd her completely because she was the one running the pods. She's the one that put the guy in the wheelchair in the pod to put him in the blue monkey person.
Yeah, but I thought she had one too.
I mean, she did.
She did have one.
She did have one, but they did do her as a person as well. And all of her essence, all of her presence, all of her charisma was just completely lost, and it was disappointing.
I thought it was all right. Then again, she wasn't, like, one of the main characters. I mean, she was an important character, but she wasn't meant to have all that, like, screen time that you're used to having her.
No, but even in some of the smaller movies that she's been in, where she's not a main character, where she's not playing the lead role, whenever she's on screen, she commands attention. You know, I mean, she's... It's like James Earl Jones' voice. He's a horrible actor. I'm sorry. I love the man in that. Really? Conan the Barbarian?
We won't speak of that movie, because that whole movie was shite.
Yeah, I don't ever go, oh man, Arnold from Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, you cannot use that as an example, because that movie was horrible, regardless.
Right, but as an actor, James Earl Jones is decent, but as a voiceover, I mean, he has that booming, commanding voice.
Absolutely.
And that's what Sigourney Weaver does when you see her on screen. She has that commanding performance. She has that essence and that charisma that draws you to her. And she didn't have that in this movie. And, you know, not to mention James Cameron is just overrated anyway.
Whatever.
Overrated is a weird word. I think it just means popular.
Okay, Alex, do you have a movie that you think was especially good with practical effects?
Yes. The first Halloween. Well, most of the old Halloween movies, I thought the practical effects, especially two, I thought the practical effects were pretty good. When he, like, lit the whole room on fire and tried to kill Michael, and he had, like, his eyes shot out and stuff. That scene was super believable. Like, I thought Michael dropped over dead in that scene.
Now, you're talking about the John Carpenter Halloween.
Yeah, the old ones.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify that for our listeners.
What about you, Austin?
Sorry, the best example of either or just practical?
Practical.
I don't know.
You don't know?
That's why I'm coming in 20 minutes left.
Star Wars has good practical effects, but then again, they have mixed with CGI sometimes. It's kind of like a both.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's not really a movie, but I recently watched Game of Thrones, and the practical effects in that show is pretty good. And they have some pretty good CG effects, too.
They have some pretty bad ones, too, though.
Yeah, some of them are bad, but not all of them.
I'm still thinking.
So for me, and I don't know if this is because I'm biased or because of my age, but
yes.
When it comes
all of the above.
All of the above, yeah.
I was about to say, I didn't want to say it, but you kind of said it, but in a nicer way. I was going to say, or because you're old.
Because I'm old. But when I think of practical effects used in movies, and the
I think of old horror movies. When I think practical effects.
Yeah, and I mean, I think of like every Rob Zombie movie because he uses a lot of practical effects. He uses very little CGI, to be honest. But when I think of practical effects, I always go back to the original Star Wars trilogy. They were forced to use practical effects, but the innovative way that George and his team came up with doing the effects that they had to do to realize George's dream was just absolutely fantastic. I mean, you had Anthony Daniels in a C-3PO costume. You had Kenny Baker.
He remained practical. Those two remained practical through the ages. Like I don't think they ever CG'd C-3PO.
No, he's the only one to ever be in every Star Wars movie ever.
But I think it's unfair to just reference.
R2 was in every movie ever as well.
Anthony Daniels. Kenny Baker passed away before.
Yeah, I think in the sequels they used an android. Not android, but a robot R2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's unfair, though, to just constantly reference Star Wars just because we leave out a lot of movies. You know, we had Terminator Judgment Day.
Yes.
They used a ton of practical effects
yeah.
in there. And very little okay, obviously the other Terminator was all
yeah,
computer.
I was going to say, which one had the all-silver Terminator?
That was T2, but Arnold's effects were all practical effects.
Well, no, I mean, even if you... So when
yeah.
you look at...
He's not all CG.
When you look at T2,
mm-hmm.
And this was actually one of... This was back before James Cameron became, you know, Hollywood's golden boy. Because he did T2, and he also did... Alien.
I like when it's overrated when it doesn't apply to a movie he likes.
Exactly. I was about to say, he became Hollywood's golden boy after Avatar.
Look, anything after Titanic is just him, you know, gloating his ego.
Was Avatar after Titanic?
Yes.
Then he's
yeah.
still a good director.
No, it's him gloating his ego.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so for Terminator 2, and I don't even know if you know this, but... In the scene where Arnold freezes the T-1000 and then blows him up, and then you see the liquid metal moving.
That's mercury, I know.
Yeah, they used mercury
yeah.
to get the fluid motion. I mean, some of it is CGI, but a lot of it is just mercury
to be fair,
that they moved on a table.
To be fair, if they were smarter, they would have used gallium because it's not toxic. But
true.
Right, but you're looking at, you know, mid-90s.
Mm-hmm. Well, then another movie would be Independence Day.
Yeah.
Where they literally blew up the White House.
Yeah.
But it was 6 feet high.
Yeah.
12 feet wide and out of plaster. But they still blew it up and it looked really cool.
Yeah.
I don't think those would have been as good without the innovation of Star Wars. Because if George Lucas, I mean, I'm sure somebody would have invented it, but when George Lucas invented blue screen and stuff like that, I don't know.
Then we have Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
They 90%, if not 100%, with practical effects.
Well, except for the face melting scene.
No, actually, no.
No, that would have to be practical. That's not CG at all.
Yeah, the three Nazis, three wonderfully gruesome deaths, one exploding, one imploding, and one melting. Dynamite and air compression cannons fought to the first two, but Ronald Lacey's death was trickier reed belts out of gelatin and stood next to a heat lamp for hours until he dripped off his mortal coil, sped up with a tiny time-lapse camera, and it still looks pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
All practical effects.
It's still George Lucas film, though.
But I'm just saying, like, super cool practical effects.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying Star Wars was the only movie that did that. I'm saying George Lucas and ILM kind of are big dogs when it comes to practical effects in movies.
George Lucas literally innovated and invented the way that we watch and listen to movies now.
I think like any other inventor, though, I think it's one of those things where, like, he did do that, but I don't think they've kept up. I think other people are doing it better now. Especially
yeah.
with what other people have taken those studios' directions
with. It honestly depends on how you look at it. Because if you look at the Marvel movies,
mm-hmm.
it's Skywalker Sound and Industrial Light and Magic, which are both Lucasfilm properties.
Yeah,
which,
but you and Alex were both complaining about their CG earlier.
Right, but I'm saying they still
the
use...
The CG doesn't look bad. I think the overuse of CG is bad.
Yeah, I think there's other people that still do it better.
I think that's true. There are movies that come out better than some of theirs, and we know that because they seem to go off of their name to hold them to less of a standard because people are going to watch them anyway.
Yeah,
whereas they've got the technology, they've got the resources, they've got the money, and their films, quite honestly, should be impeccable, and they're not. And yet we've got other companies out here who maybe don't have as much money per se, but they have amazing computer artists that are going leaps and bounds above them because they want to make it beautiful.
And I think that's why Jon Favreau went back to the use of more practical effects when it came to the Mandalorian TV show.
Probably because he didn't have to use these other people as much. Because it's probably not... In that direction, it's not the director, but it's also not the artist. Whoever leads the artist probably has more say than the director. And so if you take that away from those people, you get more say. And so that's probably why he did it.
Well, no. In the Mandalorian, it was literally Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni. They were the creators.
No, I mean, but if they used light, illumination, sound, or whatever, if they used them,
magic?
Yeah, if they used them, then somebody else would have more say.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
that's what I'm saying, that he used more practical effects. He took less power away from them and gave more to himself.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He could make it however he wanted it.
Yeah, I was praising him for that.
Yeah.
And I wish that...
ILM, though, just not to the extent that other...
not to the extent that Marvel does.
Yeah,
like Marvel relies.
I've seen that closely.
Yeah,
Marvel relies on ILM to do their effects. Like without ILM, there's not a Marvel movie. But whenever you take it to like The Mandalorian, ILM is not such a crutch as it is like the actors actually acting and stuff.
Well, the computer graphics department of ILM. Because he still uses the practical effects personnel.
Like,
yeah.
Instead of using ILM as a whole as a crutch, because you know that they have those computer artists and stuff there, he's using the practical department and the practical effects of ILM to make a show.
Yeah.
Because in all honesty, The Mandalorian doesn't need all that CGI. It needs what it has.
Right.
And something that I think that has been... Less now, because we have all of these different contentions that happen in mainly America and the world now. But between the early 2000s to like the mid-2010s, the reason that CGI was being so poor and people could pick it apart a lot more is not because the CGI is lazier and that everybody became lazier off of it, like, you know, how we think VR is going to make us.
Right.
It was more of these big movie people, these directors, wanted more of it. And the more that you want, especially with like these Marvel movies, the more that you want in the less time period that you give them, the more rushed the artists have to make it. Because basically what they do is they're going to make the whole blanket movie first.
Right.
And then go back and make details. And they make the whole blanket movie first. And then they're like, okay, we're going to move on to the next step. And the director's like, great, okay, it ships up tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I think in the time period that you're talking about, CGI, especially in movies and especially...
I got a bad rap.
Like, well...
The artist did, for sure.
The artist got a bad rep. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, like people didn't really like it all that much. Like, ew, why would they do that? Looks like shit.
Right. But I think it was this moment of clarity where these directors were like, holy shit, we can literally do whatever we want now.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, you know, we'll film it this way. We'll give it to our special effects department, and then they can fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, and a good example of that is the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. There are some pretty bad CGI effects in there.
Yeah. I don't remember them. I need to go back and watch them.
Those movies were, I don't know.
Yeah.
That
Sandman.
Those movies
No, Sandman was really good. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about the final battle.
Okay. Because Sandman throughout that movie is really, really good looking.
It is.
Those movies were extremely experimental, though. Like those were the first, like,
that's true,
big superhero movies with special effects and CGI.
Right. And that's kind of what I was talking about right there, is that during this time period, these directors and these writers and these producers and, these big movie companies, they're like, holy crap, we now have the technology to be able to do the stories we've been wanting to do for the past 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Which is, George Lucas was able to do that back in the 80s.
Yeah.
But not as much. That's why he had to be
no.
so resourceful.
Yeah.
Is because he couldn't do as much as he wanted.
Right. Which is why he came out with the special editions.
Yeah.
But when you look at, again, you know, Spider-Man 3, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man 3,
mm-hmm.
And you look at the final battle, I will say that Sandman was absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene where he's bringing himself back together after he's been, after his molecules have been mixed,
yeah.
And you have the rolling rocks and the sand just kind of moving.
Yeah, that looks, especially for the time, that looks really good.
Oh, it still looks amazing today.
Yeah.
Well,
that, so
the sand kind of looks like dust mite now, but it does still look pretty
good. It holds up.
Yeah.
It holds up. We know that it's rushed CGI. We know that it's, you know, it could be
better.
And
that's exactly what I'm talking about. They made a blanket movie the entire
yeah.
way through. And then the reason that final battle is so bad is because they were trying to make all this other movie really good. And then they got to the final battle and they were like, okay, so it's going to be out in a week.
Yeah.
Get it ready for theaters.
Yeah.
Like the CGI had a worker on the movie instead of the movie working around the CGI.
Mm,
while CGI
yeah.
is kind of limitless, there's some stuff that you just can't quite do. At least back then you couldn't do.
And one of those things is time.
Yeah. Like
one of the only
time.
Limits of CGI is time.
Yeah.
Yeah. They
don't
give them.
If you give somebody like a pen and paper and say, hey, draw Mona Lisa in 10 seconds, it's going to look like ass. But if you give them like
yeah.
10 minutes or even like an hour, it's going to look better than the 10-second drawing.
Yeah.
Even if you gave Leonardo da Vinci, right, like make a masterpiece, any masterpiece in 10 seconds, he won't do it.
No.
It took
it
him
took
like
him
3
years
to make Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He spent 3 years on the lips alone. It took him like 12 overall, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we tend to give the CGI artists and the ones that are, you know, the special effects artists, kind of a bad rap at times.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when they've given them time and they still produce.
Well, it's one of those
effects.
Things where it's also dependent on the studio, just like it's
yeah, the studio and the personnel that are working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been times where the movie was rushed and the CGI looks fantastic, but the movie's crap.
Yeah.
And
then, you know, everything
one.
Is... Everything
yeah,
is rubbed together.
Yeah, example of that. Like, the CGI looks fantastic in Rogue One, but the movie's kind of crap.
Yeah. And then you have movies where you have a perfect balance of both, and it just enhances the movie that much more.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives the movie the feel to the audience that the director wanted.
Yeah, I think this entire... show, and of course we were still going to do the show because it's what we titled it, but
yeah.
I think the title of the show and also the CGI versus practical, the Star Wars versus Star Trek, the old versus the new, I think those are all arguments that are like, can't, just don't really work anymore. It's one of those things
yeah,
where
I mean,
like,
I wasn't really
just
trying
do
to argue.
Both or do neither.
No.
I wasn't really trying to argue practical versus CGI because both, like, you kind of can't have, like, anymore you can't really have a movie with just practical effects. Like, that, it's kind of impossible. Like, you need certain elements. I was kind of arguing the fact that CGI gets abused, and when it does, it looks like absolute dog poopy.
Yeah. The biggest example that we have
CGI
is actually The Hobbit, because both Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit both use CGI as much, but The Hobbit was rushed. They needed like an extra 6 months.
Yeah.
And they did not give it to them.
And the crazy thing is,
you haven't watched them yet.
No, I haven't yet.
They're real bad.
Now you're going to make me want to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But no, so the whole premise, and I think we actually kind of hit on the premise of the show. The whole premise of the show was the differences and advantages and disadvantages of practical effects versus CGI. I think we actually hit on that pretty well tonight.
No, I mean, like, but these are things that people argue all the time.
Yeah.
These are things that people argue. Which one is better is a big argument that happens all the time, and it's like, why does one need to be better?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You can't really one isn't really better, it's just one is better in certain areas.
Yeah, one works for one type of movie, the other works for another type of movie.
Strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah. Practical is better in horror, CGI is better in fantasy. Yeah.
But like, you're not gonna use a screwdriver to do a hammer's job.
Yeah.
Like, they both have their uses. Building something. But
you could also equally switch them around, and it could still be a good movie.
It could, yeah. Absolutely. All right, so we are down to the last 5 minutes. We really went down to the wire on this show, and that's what I love. I do. We really had some great discussions. Started out a little rough.
Yeah, I had to come in because that was going to be a lot of texting.
we started out a little rough at the beginning, but I think once we got rolling, I think it was a good show. So I want to thank everybody tonight. Thank my co-hosts, Angel, Alex, and then Austin right at the end. I do want to thank Austin for, helping us with our live feed, as always.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to thank all of our listeners, all of our followers. Thank you to Squatchy McNutters for calling in. And, giving us a brief stay tuned for more on Mr. McNutters. I do want to thank all of our listeners, all of our followers. We do love you, every single one of you. We appreciate all the love and support that we get from you. Speaking of support, Sports Veterans, Fire, Police, and EMS that are out there every day, putting their lives on the line for you. Don't judge the 99% by the 1%. They are generally good. As always, be safe, be smart. We want you back here every night that we broadcast on Wiki Curiosity Media. I believe Dying Glasses is coming back Friday from a very small, not very small, from a short hiatus. And, trying to rework his show. So I believe he will be back on Friday. Sunday, there will be no movie of the week. It is Easter Sunday, and it is one of our hosts' birthdays, so we'll be celebrating both of those on Sunday. But I believe Falling from Grace will be back next Tuesday, and we will be having a show, a Cinephiles, next Wednesday. So look forward to the follow the pages so you can be kept up to date. As always, we love you guys. We hope you have a fantastic rest of your Wednesday night and a fantastic week. We'll see you back here on the Cinephiles on next Wednesday.
Have a good night, everybody. And a happy Easter.
Happy Easter, everybody. Love you guys. Have a good night.
All right, no problem.
me off and say you're tired of talking. Not as if we can't agree, but you've lost your will to fight. You're packing up all your things to leave. These will be our last words. Then the chance will be lost. And I ain't too proud. If you loved me, you would hold me and never let me go. If you loved me, you would tell me you never want me to be alone. If you cared at all, you would stop and never go. Just turn your back to me and say, guess what? Thank you.